Hey, folks, thanks for tuning in to CBSSports.com College Football Podcast. We are keeping it rolling with our conference preview series, and we move to the almighty SEC, the holder of the last six BCS national championships. And joining me on the phone today is Jerry Hennen, fresh off his work on the Olympic blog. And Jerry, first of all, you, Matt Norlander, Matt Moore, Brian Fisher, all did very fine work. Before we get into football, I know it's fresh in your mind, so I got to hear, what's sort of a lasting memory that you'll have from getting to cover the Olympics?
I'm going to remember Alex Morgan scoring in the 123rd minute to beat Canada. That soccer game, first of all, is easily the best women's soccer game I've ever seen. Well, I shouldn't say easily because, you know, the U.S. has had a couple others. Over the past few years, the win against Brazil last summer where Wambach headed in the goal in the 122nd minute comes to mind. But that was definitely definitely in my mind, the greatest women's soccer match I've ever seen. It was definitely one of the greatest soccer matches I've ever seen, regardless of gender or tournament or whatever. And what I wrote for the blog, and I it's been more than a week and I still feel this way, that was one of the greatest sporting events I've ever witnessed. Like, it was the drama, the passion that those players had on the field, the comeback, the drama, the ending of it with Morgan scoring that late in the game. That's one of those things that's going to stick with me, I think, for as long as I'm a sports fan. It's like the Duke Kentucky regional final, you know, when Leitner hits the shot. Like, you remember those kinds of sporting events, you know, no matter how long it takes. And I'm trying to think of a worse way to, like, welcome any SEC football fans who are tuning into the podcast discussing how great Canadian women soccer players are. So we should probably get to that football thing. The Olympics is done, man. It was awesome, but it's done. That was kind of the great thing about covering it was I kind of, as far as football went, I went to sleep for about 2.5 weeks, and I woke up, and it's the season. Like, it's 2 weeks away, training camp's in full swing. I'm pumped, man. I'm pumped.
No, the cool thing is we finally are turning the corner from, you know, when August comes, and especially we get here into mid-August, late August, it's the end of speculation because we've got these guys in camp. We've got actual reports of how they're looking, and, you know, the position battles, and there's nothing that's more fun to talk about than what's between the hashes. So we've got a little bit of a clear idea moving forward. And so to preview the SEC on this podcast, Jerry and I are going to separate the pretenders from the contenders. We're going to go through each of the divisions, and we're basically going to sort of divide everything up into sections. You're either a contender at the top, you're a pretender at the bottom, and then we're going to have a little middle, a little Steelers wheel region. We're going to call it stuck in the middle. So you're either stuck in the middle, a pretender, or a contender, and we're just going to run down the divisions and sort of see, you know, what a team could do to maybe become a contender, or what a contender or a stuck in the middle team, what could happen to them that could possibly make them a pretender by the end of the season. That makes sense, Jerry?
Yes, absolutely. Let's do it.
All right, so let's start in the SEC West, the almighty SEC West. We'll go ahead, and I assume that you agree that our contenders are Alabama, LSU, and Arkansas, right?
Yeah, I can't argue with that. On paper, those are the three best teams in the league, and it won't surprise me let me say this. I won't be shocked if maybe one other team breaks up that triumvirate by the end of the year, kind of sneaks into one of those top three places. But that's unlikely. I think you have to say, looking at everything, that those ought to be the top three teams in the division this year, yeah.
Real quickly, how do you have them sort of shaking out and why?
Yeah, I've got Alabama at the top, followed by LSU, for me, actually a distant second, and then Arkansas third. For me, Alabama, I think, has the most complete team. They know who they are, you know, lots of coaching continuity, even with McElwain moving on. You know, Saban knows what he wants from his offense. He's hired a guy in Doug Nussmeier who can do that. You know, Kirby Smart's still there on the defense. You know, they haven't lost the kind of personnel that they lost after the 2009 championship. Then the defense was completely gutted. The offensive line needed some retooling. This year, that offensive line is just going to annihilate people. A.J. McCarron's still there to kind of pull the strings in the passing game. The defense, you know, is loaded. They don't have to really rebuild. It's all reloading at this point on that defense. So I think they're the most complete team. They're the ones that I look at, and I have the hardest time sort of picking out the chinks in the armor.
So am I crazy for thinking, because this has been just a single theory. It's not, you know, I haven't extrapolated it past anything other than the very simple fact that obviously Alabama's back seven. There's a lot of new starters, and the coverage schemes are very complex. And the fact that Arkansas, with that high-powered offense, gets Alabama coming to town on September 15th early in the season, it seems like if there's any time that you could, because I agree with you, as far as, you know, looking at complete teams, Alabama's there, but where competing for the division title will be a matter of games, I'm sort of sitting here looking like, if Arkansas has a shot to knock them off there, and that, if anything else, will just cause, you know, a huge shakeup, because you no longer have the favorite with that zero in the loss column for the West.
Kind of in the catbird seat there. My issue with that is what we saw in that Alabama-Arkansas game the last couple of years. Alabama has not been seriously threatened by Arkansas, either of these, you know, it's been several seasons since that game. Was really close, and Saban has consistently found ways to shut down that Arkansas passing game. They had some success last year, but nothing too major until the game was, you know, kind of already a 2-touchdown, 3-touchdown game. Arkansas's defense has not been the kind of defense that can really shut down Alabama's running game for 60 minutes. They can do it, you know, in little chunks here and there, but, you know, Arkansas has some new players in their front seven. They've lost Jericho Nelson, lost Jerry Franklin, lost Jake Paquette. So they've got some retooling to do on defense, too. And Alabama's running game is going to be every bit as potent as that Arkansas passing game when you look at what they've got up front. No Trent Richardson, but, you know, they're going to be fine. Eddie Lacy averaged something ridiculous on the ground last year, 6 yards a carry. T.J. Yeldon looked fantastic during the spring, and that's running back sort of the one position where you can take a five-star freshman and plug him in and say, okay, you know, we're not going to really have to worry about this guy. Maybe in like pass protection, learning, you know, all the sorts of ins and outs, pass routes maybe, but just handing the ball off and saying, okay, go. You can do that with a freshman running back the way you might not be able to at other positions. So I'm not worried about the Alabama running game, and I think that's a huge matchup positive for them taking on that inexperienced Arkansas front. Basically, for me, until I see Arkansas do something other than just kind of make Alabama sweat for a quarter or two, I don't see them winning that game, no matter where it's played.
Yeah, no, I got you there, because it doesn't matter whether you have a four-year starter or a freshman when you've got, you know, three, like, basically all-American caliber offensive linemen that are all just giants and can move too. That's the other thing, is the way that they can get out in the open field and set blocks downfield, you basically just create a maze of bodies that any running back with, you know, athleticism and speed will be able to get through.
Yeah, well, Alabama's offensive line is just ridiculous this year. To me, there's no better example of that than, okay, they had an Outland Trophy-winning left tackle, okay, in Barrett Jones, and they have moved him to center, okay, to make room for Cyrus Kwanjo. That's how good Kwanjo is, and he's the least experienced guy on that line. He's, on paper, sort of the weak link, if you will. Like, Anthony Steen at right guard isn't quite in the same league, I think, as Jones or Chance Warmack or DJ Fluker, or probably even Kwanjo, but this is the kind of potential we're talking about on this line, where you've taken somebody who's won the Outland Trophy at the most valuable position on the offensive line and moved him to center, which is, you know, most coaches, most fans would consider that the least valuable part of the offensive line. You know, that's not something I would necessarily agree with, but at least in terms of like draft potential or whatever,
right.
You know, you can come by centers a lot easily more easily than you can left tackles, and they made the choice anyway. So now you've got, you know, now he's going to, Jones is going to win the Remington instead of the Outland or whatever. It's just, if that five stays healthy, Alabama's going to have one of the best offenses in the country. And Alabama typically has this reputation for being buttoned down, you know, play it safe. And that's kind of the way Saban likes it, but that overlooks how explosive they are in the running game, how consistently they do like to stretch the field when they get a chance to go play action. You know, in average yards per play, they tend to be one of actually the better offenses in the SEC and even the country. So, you know, I don't really expect that to change this year. I think they might have a little bit of problems finding a game-breaking wide receiver, but that's it. They've got everything else they need.
All right, as far as our Steelers wheel region stuck in the middle of the SEC West, we remember our contenders are Bama, LSU, and Arkansas. I've got Auburn there, and my question to you is, you know, first of all, who else would you put there? And then if you would add anyone there, what could those teams do in order to make that jump up to SEC West contending?
Right. I think Auburn would be the best choice for that, kind of stuck in the middle position where it's hard to see them really challenging for the SEC West, but at the same time, I think they've got a leg up on the rest of the division with Texas A&M, Mississippi State, and Ole Miss. With Mississippi State, I think might be the first candidate where you'd say, okay, maybe they're going to be able to sneak up into that upper echelon, possibly pick off an LSU or an Arkansas or an Auburn, especially. I think they get Auburn at home early in the season. You know, so that's a team that you'll want to keep your eye on if Dan Mullen can kind of get that offense back online, because the defense should be really, really good. That's one of Mullen's tenure. But I think they just don't quite have the overall talent base that Auburn's kind of been able to build up through Gene Chizik's recruiting the first couple of years. It hasn't quite lived up to the ratings because they've had some high-profile flameouts. Mike Dyer's not around anymore. There's been a couple of other guys, you know, that just haven't lived up to their billing. Trovon Reed, you know, is a really high-profile wide receiver that, as of yet, hasn't lived up to that. But the overall talent base is still just way, way ahead of what Mississippi State can boast. And I think this year what you're going to see, especially from Auburn's defense, is going to be huge leap forward. I think Brian Van Gorder knows what he's doing. He's done it everywhere he's been. And Auburn does not lack for talent on the defensive side of the ball. Corey Lemonnier is going to be maybe the SEC's best pass rusher. They've got a lot of young talent in the secondary. Jermaine Whitehead, Enrique Florence, you know, Chris Davis is back, you know, at corner. They've got some guys who can get it done in the secondary. So I think, you know, we're going to see something completely different from what we saw 2 years ago during the national title run. We're going to see a team sort of in that Alabama mold that doesn't take a lot of chances on offense, but, you know, really has the capability to lock you down on defense. And if Auburn can get something out of that offense, if Kyle Frazier can come through as the quarterback, if they can find a running back out of these many candidates who can carry the load, you know, Emery Blake stays healthy, a wide receiver, if they can just get a little bit out of their offense, I think you could maybe even see them move up and, you know, pip LSU or Arkansas for one of those top three spots.
Now, in the down at the Pretenders, I got to tell you, man, I love Kevin Sumlin, but I just think there are so many concerns on the Texas A&M defense that this is just, yeah, it's going to be a rough, rough first season, especially going up against, you know, the offensive lines, like we said at Alabama. It's, people always say the one thing about the SEC, and I'm sure I'm preaching to the choir here, but it's, the biggest defense is right there along the offensive and defensive lines. I mean, it's just a different breed of player. They're just bigger. They're faster. It's, I think it's going to be a rough first season for the Aggies.
Yeah, I'm not worried about the Aggies' offensive line, actually. They've got a couple of huge tackles in Luke Jokels and Jake Matthews that are going to be able to hold their own. Those guys are going to be first-round NFL draft picks, assuming they come out this year and stay healthy. That's one place I'm actually not worried about A&M, but you are talking about having a first-year quarterback in the SEC who's learning a new system. You know, there's been some major losses at wide receiver with Jeff Fuller. You know, it's just hard for me to see everything coming together with so much transition, and that goes double on defense.
I was thinking about the defense. Yeah, defensive line and scheme change, like, on the defensive end.
Yeah, they are going from a 3-4 to a 4-3, so they don't really have the right personnel. They've lost, again, a lot of, key players on that side of the ball. To me, it's just a year early. I think A&M was better than their record last year, which would normally make me say, okay, well, we're going to see the record improve, even if the team may not. But I think between the schedule getting tougher, the transition going from, huge shifts in scheme on both sides of the ball. I don't want to be that SEC homer who just says, they're coming from the Big 12, they can't compete, blah, 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 which, I'm not real high on Missouri either. But that's the way I see it. I just think it's too much of a transition in this one year to both switch conferences, switch schemes on both sides of the ball, and make up for the losses. It's just too much. I think it's just too much.
Okay, and Ole Miss, what's the best-case scenario? Because they're obviously a pretender in our little shakedown right now. So what's sort of the best thing that they've got going for them headed into the season?
If Hugh Freeze wins 5 games, he should be the National Coach of the Year. Like, with their schedule and just the emptiness of the cupboard that Houston not left there, you're talking about a team that went 2-10 and was winless in the SEC last year, and has lost a lot of major contributors off of that team. It's just hard to see a whole lot of traction. I don't think they're going to go winless again. I think Freeze is a good enough of an offensive mind, and the team's going to be together enough that they're not going to go winless, but anything more than 1-7 in the SEC will be a huge success for that program.
All right, so our SEC West, our contenders, Alabama, LSU, Arkansas, Steelers, Wheels, stuck in the middle, Auburn, chance to move up or down, and our pretenders, Texas A&M, Mississippi State, and Mississippi. Moving over to the SEC East, are you giving anybody other than Georgia or South Carolina the contender title?
Oh, Florida absolutely deserves it.
Really?
State
your case there, because I had them stuck in the middle, but I'm interested to hear what you got there.
Okay, well, first of all, the defense is going to be excellent. Like, this is still the same group of guys that's been playing on the defensive line for multiple years now, especially with Ronald Powell apparently is going to play, Sharif Floyd, Dominic Easley. Those guys have never lacked for potential. It's always just kind of been putting it together. So I think this is the year that they do that. I think this is the year they put it together, the second year under Muschamp. I am not really worried about their defensive line. And then you got Jelani Jenkins at linebacker. The secondary's full of guys who basically took their lumps last year. I think it's going to be, along with Georgia, along with Alabama, one of the best defenses in the SEC and one of the best defenses in the country. So opposite that, you just need, again, something from the offense. And they didn't get it last year. The offense was terrible. But I think Brent Peace knows what he's doing. I think he's much more in tune with what Muschamp wants from his offense. I think the pieces are there, for Florida to make a run at the divisional title. I think they finish ahead of South Carolina, and that's not necessarily a knock against South Carolina, who should be very good again. You got to like the star talent that they've got there with Lattimore and Clowney. But again, kind of with the Auburn-Mississippi State head-to-head thing, I just like the overall depth of the talent that's there at Florida a little bit more than I do the Gamecocks.
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right. Do you have Georgia sort of as your leader in the SEC East hunt, I'm guessing?
I do. I think their coaching stability is a big plus. Mike Bobo's been there forever. He knows what he's doing. Crowell or no Crowell, they're going to find ways to move the ball. And that defense, I think, is going to be the best in the SEC. I think Jarvis Jones, that defensive line is just massive this year. Lots of experience in the secondary. As long as they don't kind of trip over themselves on that very first trip to Columbia, they should be fine. I think, they've got the schedule, they get to play Ole Miss. It really seems to me like things have lined up again for Georgia to win the division for a second straight year. South Carolina has kind of had their number a little bit of late. Last year won a game that really Georgia should have won, but I don't think, and this year it's going to Columbia. The game, is going to be in Williams-Brice. So, you know, that would be the one thing that would kind of make me pause, is if Carolina can pick up the tiebreaker again. But other than that, I just think over the long haul, Georgia's got the most talented team. They've got the most coaching stability. I think that's really the team you have to pick as your default for the SEC East title.
And we were talking earlier about how it's so much fun now that we've got some, you know, actual reports, like a little bit of a look, a better idea. And you said Crowell or no Crowell, and turns out, you know, as soon as Georgia camp opens, we're already getting lots of positive returns on true freshman Todd Gurley. And it's
right.
It's one of those things where you're like, hey, you know, if the system fits it, and defenses are going to have to respect Aaron Murray, who, as Chris Houston said on the show when he was doing his Heisman watch, he said, you know, the most incredible thing, like, and it speaks to Aaron Murray's talent, is that he was able to put up all those numbers despite the system, and where that Georgia offense has never really allowed even, you know, Matt Stafford and these incredible quarterbacks to put up great numbers, and here he goes, you know, putting up school record numbers. You throw in a top, you know, freshman running back, one of the best probably right. in the conference, and it's along with, obviously, like you said, the defense. For me, I've got the Bulldogs back in the SEC championship game as well. All right. Moving on to our Steelers wheel stuck in the middle. I'll give Florida the bump up to on your recommendation, but that leaves me just with Tennessee. I'm not feeling good enough about Missouri or Vandy to put them in the middle, but you know, is that the way you see it as well?
Yeah, Tennessee, I think, has got to be in that middle slot. You look at them and you think, you know, if Bray can stay healthy, if the receivers can stay healthy, then that team's going to be able to put up the points stay with just about anyone. You know, the question is, can they make the plays down the stretch of a close game that they simply haven't made under Derek Dooley? You know, this is just, it's kind of a weird vibe with Tennessee, where on paper you say they've got the starters, you know, so much experience coming back. They've got talented guys. It's just a matter of, can they sort of get over this hump where it just seems like they don't know how to win under Dooley, that they've lost some of that confidence from the former era. You know, that game they lost to Kentucky last year, they just had no business losing that game. You know, Kentucky runs out a wide receiver, a quarterback. You know, Bray just doesn't seem to be there mentally. You know, that's the kind of game that, you know, you can look at paper all day and say, well, there's no way Tennessee can lose this game, and then they go out and they find a way to lose it. So, you know, that's what keeps me from saying, well, they're going to be in that same echelon with Florida and Georgia and Carolina. I think that's where you have to say you can't guarantee that Dooley's going to get another year, even though they should be much improved. They should get to those 8 or 9 wins. But until we actually see it happen, they're going to be the biggest boom or bust team in the SEC. Nothing that Tennessee does this year would surprise me. They could beat Alabama. Hey, like, you know, you have to respect what Bray can do with his arm, and, you know, that offensive line is returning intact. They can't be as bad in the running game as they were. But at the same time, you know, they could go 2-6 in the SEC, and Dooley could be fired after another 5-win season, and that wouldn't be surprising either.
All right, I'm going to put you on the spot right now. Is Derek Dooley the head coach of the Tennessee Volunteers in 2013?
I think he is. I think they do enough to save his job. I think most people say that 8 wins is the benchmark that's going to get him back there, and I think they pull it out. I think the division isn't quite as top heavy as the SEC West. If they were in the West, I think it might be a different story with Arkansas and LSU on the schedule, but they don't have those teams on the schedule this year, and I think they can pull out at least one, maybe even 2 victories from that Florida, Georgia, South Carolina trio there. Probably more like 1, but I would be surprised if they go 0-3 against those teams, and I would be surprised if Dooley doesn't come back.
What's all right, so we've got our contenders, our Georgia, South Carolina, Florida, our Steelers wheel stuck in the middle region. It's just Tennessee, which leaves Missouri, Vanderbilt, and Kentucky down there in the pretenders. And James Franklin, well, both James Franklins would be upset about this, but I know particularly the coach. My thing looking at Vanderbilt, like, you obviously see, especially on the recruiting front, that's, you know, you see more top prospects or have Vanderbilt in their top 10, top 5. You can see that they're getting out there, but to me, I'm just not seeing enough in this season to think that this will be the breakthrough to even make them like in the middle or a contender. I mean, do you have Missouri? Where do you put Missouri and Vandy? How do you rank them, and how do you see that playing out?
Well, again, this is going to sound like the squawking of a total SEC homer, but I've got Vandy fifth and Missouri sixth in the division. That was how I predicted it for CBSSports.com when we did our big SEC preview a little while back. And to me, it's about what happened at Vanderbilt when Jordan Rogers took over at quarterback last year. They had Larry Smith starting the season, and it didn't work out. They were miserable against South Carolina. Jordan Rogers came in, and after that was a really threatening team. Absolutely should have beaten Arkansas last year. Scared the pants off of Georgia. Gave Florida a real tussle. Again, took Tennessee to overtime in Knoxville. That is a dangerous, dangerous team with Jordan Rogers at the helm there. And I think that gives them something to build around. Vanderbilt hasn't had that quarterback you could really rely on to make the plays for you since maybe Jay Cutler was back there. It's been a long, long time. And I think giving a coach like James Franklin, who accomplished so much last year, like that could have easily been a 7-win, an 8-win team coming off that 2-10 season that they had under Robbie Caldwell. That was a phenomenal coaching job. If he does anything like that again this year with Rogers in place, with Zach Stacy and Warren Norman in the backfield, some solid receivers, some experienced linemen, and even on defense, they're going to miss some of the big kind of playmakers that they had last year in Robert Marv, Casey Hayward. But they've still got, some solid guys there in terms of the overall returning starters. That defense isn't just going to roll over for people either. I really think Vandy's going to go to a bowl game again this year. And I think, they're going to be a 6-win, 7-win, possibly even 8-win team, although I think that might be a bit of a stretch. As for Missouri, the schedule is not kind. They get Alabama. They get Georgia kind of right off the bat, which I don't think is really what's best for them. I know Georgia is going to have their players suspended. It's going to be a huge atmosphere there in Columbia, but I think they're going to need a little bit of time to blood some of the new guys they've got on the defensive line. Maybe find out exactly where they can penetrate a defense like Georgia's, which, that's the one thing you didn't see in the Big 12 was a defense like what Georgia's going to throw at them. And I think Gary Pinkel and his staff may take them a couple of games to figure out, okay, what's really the best way to attack a defense like that. So I don't really like them playing Georgia that early in the season. To me, it's just another one of these cases where I totally respect what Gary Pinkel and his guys have done in the Big 12. I think, they're going to be underrated by a lot of SEC fans, and, they may be being underrated by me right now when I say, okay, I think they're going to finish sixth in the division. But it's just a rough schedule for them, and I think it's going to take some adjustment on their part too. And, again, I just don't see the bodies, especially on that defensive line where there's not a lot of depth, not a lot of star power maybe aside from Sheldon Richardson, to really say that they're going to be able to do much more than just kind of, struggle at the bottom of the division.
It's also tough because you want to think that Henry Josie's going to be able to step right back in, but there is no promise that after that horrific knee explosion, he's going to be able to be 100% or anything like he was, which is sad because he was exhilarating.
It's horrible.
Much. Yeah.
He was one of the best running backs in America before it happened, but he tore his ACL and his MCL. He was having his kind of follow-up surgery in the spring. Expecting him to even get on the field at all, I think at this point, is dicey. And expecting him to be anything like he was last year, to me, that's not happening. I'm not a doctor, and, I hope I'm proven wrong. I hope Josie comes back and he shows, even three-quarters of the kind of flash and explosiveness he showed off last year, because if that's the case, well, he's going to be a difference maker. But I just have a hard time seeing it after that severe an injury.
What do you have for the Kentucky fans that have stuck around through this podcast? What's give these pretenders a glimmer of hope?
Oh, man. I can't do it, Chip. If they win one SEC game, I'll be happy for them. It's just, you know, they get a couple of potential wins at home, which is a positive. Mississippi State, I'm pretty sure, goes to Lexington. Vandy goes to Lexington. You know, so if they're going to win a game, the schedule, you know, gives them a couple of opportunities. But that defense was just so, so bad last year. I think, you know, it says something that with the biggest game of the season on the line, you know, that season finale against Tennessee with the streak, and that was the one game that Kentucky, like, absolutely had to win. The player that Joker Phillips turned to at quarterback was one of his wide receivers.
Yeah.
You know, that was a guy who he said, you're who I want under center for this make or break game. You know, it was that kind of offensive year, and I just don't really see enough of a step forward on offense. They lose a ton of great players on defense. They've got some great guys at defensive tackle with Mr. Cobble and I think Dante Rumpf. You know, so they've got some talent there in the very center of the defensive line. But overall, that's one of the least experienced defenses in the SEC, you know, opposite an offense that was just awful to watch at times last year. So I'm not really seeing a whole lot of improvement. I'm not really seeing a whole lot of wins. If they get to, you know, four wins overall, I think Phillips will have actually done a pretty decent job. But I don't know if that's going to be enough to get him back in the same position for 2013.
All right, let's start running down. What is the – give me one player, or you can give me a couple, but a player whose name might not be known by most, even SEC diehards, that you're looking to have a breakout here in 2012?
I'm going to go with Bama outside linebacker Adrian Hubbard, who has not played a whole lot because he's been playing behind guys, you know, like Courtney Upshaw there. You know, Alabama, it's not easy to find playing time at outside linebacker in Alabama's 3-4. The way Saban's recruited, it just has not been the sort of position where you can come in and make an immediate impact. So Hubbard's kind of had to bide his time these last couple of years. But he's one of these guys who came in as just an athletic freak, really raw, but he has developed and in the spring was Alabama's best pass rusher coming off the edge. And I think he's going to have a Courtney Upshaw-like impact this year. I think he's going to lead Alabama in sacks, and, you know, maybe he's not going to put up Jarvis Jones kind of numbers, but it would not surprise me to see him land on a first-team All-SEC at the end of the season.
And just from your perspective, obviously, all the Eye on College Football bloggers, we cover the entire nation. You know, we try and give you all the latest breaking news and analysis. But, you know, when it comes game day, we split up everything, and Jerry's our SEC man. So I'm going to ask you, what are you looking forward to? Like, give me one either story or angle or something intriguing, something that when you are thinking about this season, you are really excited about in the SEC.
Man, I want to see what happens with LSU. I want to see what happens with Les Miles, because that, to me, is the most intriguing team in the country. You know, you look at what they accomplished last year, where just blew everybody out of the water and then had their one really, truly poor game at the worst possible time. And then, you know, since then, the atmosphere around that program has just seemed to turn poisonous is too strong a word, but it just seems to be down. Like, you had all these guys saying that they didn't like the play calling after the game, all the seniors, you know, coming out. You had them with a disappointing signing day where the recruit from Texas, I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but said that the players just didn't seem happy when he visited LSU. And, you know, now you got Matthew suspended, you know, off the team. And, you know, it just has seemed like things are slowly unraveling and kind of snowballing ever since that BCS championship game. And so, you know, the thing people always say about Les Miles is that he's not, well, I won't say everybody, but a lot of people say he's not actually a great coach and that, you know, he just gets lucky. And, you know, even last year you can make an argument that they were powered by their sort of special teams and turnovers and these really big plays that maybe they're not going to get this year, especially with Matthew off the team. So I want to see how Les Miles responds to all this. I want to see how he brings that team together, and if he can sort of turn this snowballing around and get it rolling back down the other side of the mountain the way he did last year, because clearly they've got the talent with Mettenberger now taking over as the quarterback, a good core of wide receivers, you know, the best front, best defensive line, I'll say, possibly in the country. You know, it just is all about, is this team going to kind of come together and play to their potential, or are they just going to kind of wait and hope for a big play the way they have done at certain times of Miles' tenure that may not come? It's, I have no idea what's going to happen with LSU this year, and I can't wait to see what does.
He is Jerry Hinnon. You can follow him on Twitter at Jerry Hinnon. And, of course, you can follow all of our work at the Ion College Football blog by our Twitter account at IonCFB. Jerry, I really appreciate you taking the time to preview the SEC. Look forward to doing this more through the season.
Sounds good. Talk to you later, Jim.
And a special thank you for tuning into the CBSSports.com College Football Podcast. Be sure to check back at the Ion College Football blog for new episodes, or you can go to iTunes where you can download as many as you want for the low price of $3.99. For Jerry Hinnon, I'm Chip Patterson. Thanks for listening.